Yes.
Yes.
Let me please the court. I'm Jordan Johnson, honored to represent Appellant Benarvis Johnson in this matter. Appellant Benarvis Johnson is a 31-year-old Marine veteran who was requested to be at Clayton County Courthouse on December 7, 2016, regarding a follow-up meeting in reference to an alleged child support order. While seated in the courtroom waiting to be called, he was using his tablet computer on silent mode. He was approached in the courtroom. There were conspicuous signs posted, right? Yes, there were signs outside the courtroom, Your Honor, that said no electronic devices.
Right.
And he was in the courtroom, and Defendant Lewis approached him. And requested him step outside to take off his hat, and did not use his tablet. My client took off his hat, went back in the courtroom, and again, no judge on the bench, and no proceedings in progress. He continued using his tablet computer.
Though he had been told not to use his tablet computer in the courtroom.
But then proceeded to, seeing no judge on the bench, and he believed that it was not illegal to use a tablet in a courtroom. He proceeded using the tablet in this courtroom. So, Your Honors understand, I don't want to interrupt you, but what type of court was it?
Was it a juvenile court?
And this is under the record. It was a courtroom in the Clayton County Courthouse. There was no proceedings going on, from my understanding, and my understanding of the record is that it was being used as sort of a waiting area to go and meet with somebody. Unlike here, Your Honors are on the bench, they were just sitting there waiting, there was nothing going on.
But aren't courts allowed to set rules for courthouse decorum even when court is not officially in session?
Well, from my understanding through practicing law, there are sometimes signs posted, but I believe in order to arrest someone or to incarcerate somebody, it has to be a violation of a public stated court order. And according to the record, defendant Butz has testified that it was up to the individual judge whether or not what the electronic device policy was in a certain court.
Let me ask you this question. The district court held that it was an unlawful arrest because the signs didn't say the source of the authority to prohibit electronic devices in the courtroom. It seems to me that is wrong. It seems to me that it doesn't really matter whether the signs were actually authorized. The issue for probable cause is whether or not a reasonable officer in those circumstances would have believed that the signs were authorized and therefore violation would be probable cause to arrest. And it seems to me that the mere presence of those signs gives that officer ample reasonable belief that the signs were authorized. Now, it is true, Deputy Goodson testified that not all the judges enforced that, but that doesn't mean it wasn't a rule. It seems to me the district court was wrong. And he affirmed for different reasons, but it seems like to me we should affirm because it was reasonable for the officer to believe that the signs were authorized and therefore there was probable cause. What's wrong with that?
Well, Your Honor, I think that creates a due process issue and a concerning delegation of obedience to just any sign that may exist. I mean, I know that in other contexts, oftentimes in the Parking Act, you have a sign or notice saying that we are liable for something that happens.
You're in a courthouse, in a courtroom, and there's signs, not just one, but multiple signs. Why wouldn't an ordinary person think that was authorized? Who would put up an unauthorized sign, and with judges and prosecutors walking around all the time, an unauthorized sign wouldn't stay up long, would it?
Well, Your Honor, just because a sign exists in a courtroom, we would contend that that does not create law. Just if a sign says that you are not allowed to speak, if a sign says you can go back into the street, you have a situation where certain races were discriminated against in courthouses, just because a sign says something does not mean that it's a lawful order of the court or that it is a published law or policy anywhere.
Do you think that courts are obligated to officially promulgate and publish any rule in order for parties in court to be called to follow that rule?
Your Honor, I believe that would be a necessary part of due process, that anybody in the public would need to know where the authority comes from. And I mean, the officers in this case, the defendants, are...
pretty safe assumption if there are signs around the courthouse that that's a court rule, right?
I would not know. I personally would not know because oftentimes I see signs that say no cabinets.
Wait a minute. The due process concern would be a concern about fair notice of what the prohibition is. There's no question here about that. The only complaint, your argument is that unless you know the source of the prohibition, the authority for that prohibition, that there's a due process concern, notwithstanding the fact this is a courthouse. It's public property. The officials of the court therefore control it and would have been responsible for the posting of any signs. The authority comes from the very fact that they're placed in the courthouse itself, doesn't it?
Well, Your Honor, the issue in this specific case is that there seems to be no authority in the record that shows that
there's testimony, isn't there, that Lewis specifically testified one of the procedures and protocols associated with that courthouse was the policy that no electronic devices, including tablets, are permitted to be used in the courtroom. There's testimony about that.
Yes, Lewis stated that it's up to each individual judge. I would know from my personal experience in courtrooms and courthouses that, for example, Your Honor could order me to do something if I disobey, I'm taken into custody. If I disobey the standing rules of this court, I could be held in contempt and taken into custody. But ultimately, if someone is not violating those rules, if they're just around the building, And an officer tells them to do something, and it's not totally consistent with all the signs that are posted around the courthouse, right?
I mean, what that officer said to your client was in total conformance with all those signs, wasn't it?
Your Honor, what the officer said in the Rolling Devices was in accordance with that if you assume that was a universal prohibition because attorneys...
Well, even if you assume it's a prohibition that depends on the context of each specific judge, when the officer approaches your client and says, not in this courtroom, that's enough, isn't it?
I do not believe so, Your Honor, because an attorney in that courtroom would not have likely been approached by the officers, and that's also in the record testimony. I mean, there seems to be a situation where it was not being applied formally, attorneys in the courthouse were able to use tablets. That's what I believe the defendant's not the basis of the district court's ruling or your argument, as I understood it.
You didn't make an argument of equal protection or something like that.
No, Your Honor, the way I'm looking at this is from a holistic viewpoint in response to the court's question. If the idea is that a sign creates law, even if it is not promulgated through a specific court order or through the legislature, then no citizen would have an obligation to comply with something that is not... that is not legally created through the legislature. My understanding is that the basic part of fundamental due process is that
Well, first of all, courts create our own rules. We don't need the legislature to do that. But second of all, I don't think that an official rule is required, but are you familiar with Juvenile Rule 13.1A?
I am not familiar with that.
It's my understanding that that rule prohibits parties and spectators from using electronic devices. So even assuming that you need an official rule, why isn't that enough?
Well, Your Honor, I do not believe this was a juvenile courtroom. I don't think it was juvenile. I don't think that was the nature of the courtroom or the courthouse.
It's my understanding that a custody, a child support order would be most likely juvenile. So that was one reason I asked you from the beginning whether you knew what type of court proceeding your client was there for. But that's not in the record. I didn't see it.
No, my client, there was some discussion on whether or not he was there for a child support issue or if he was there for some sort of contempt issue.
Contempt for what? Contempt for failing to pay child support?
I do not believe there was sort of an exchange in the deposition testimony where there was a question whether or not he was there for child support hearing. He stated on the record that it was that he received a notice for contempt of something. It wasn't something I was familiar with legally. He contested his need to even be there at the courthouse. He personally didn't think that he needed to be there, but he was attending and was operating his tablet at the time. The fact that the order was not published in any manner that verified that it was actually a legal order, simply having a sign of the preferences of the courthouse staff, I would believe would not be binding.
Okay, Mr. Johnson, you've saved 3 minutes for rebuttal. We'll hear from Mr. Saverin.
Sitting through the last argument, I'm glad this one's in person.
Yeah, that makes many of us.
Maybe we should go back to telephone conferences, Your Honor. To answer the specific question, Judge Grant, this was a juvenile court.
How do we know that from the record?
It's in Ms. Debbie Lewis's deposition. And I have written down here on my note, I don't have the deposition with me, but on page 34. He testified that he was assigned to Judge Teske. I think that's correctly, T-E-S-K-E, courtroom. And that he was assigned that particular courtroom. Your Honor, I think that this case, as I encapsulated, is about the ability of a bailiff to maintain order and decorum in a courtroom and civil liability that may arise under the Fourth Amendment of the Constitution. We maintain, of course, that there was probable cause to arrest Mr. Johnson for a number of reasons. I would point out that apart from the sign, this was a bailiff in the courtroom. The bailiff asked you not to do something, and you don't do it unless it's something that you're categorically allowed to do. And if you want to contest it, there are means to contest that. You can go through some administrative procedure. You can ask a judge when a judge comes to the courtroom whether or not, for some reason. I know there have been times when I've been allowed to use a computer in the courtroom for a specific reason, but you ask permission for that. And I also want to point out that this was not as though the officer, Debbie Lewis, went up to Mr. Johnson and said, Turn off your tablet, and immediately melee ensued. He took him out in the hallway, explained to him that this was the rule. There was, of course, the sign that shows that. They went back in. Mr. Johnson defied Deputy Lewis's direction. They went back out into the hall to talk about it again. Then the evidence is undisputed. They went back into the courtroom. Mr. Johnson turned on his tablet, did not look at his tablet, and instead looked directly at the bailiff. At that point, the bailiff told him that he was under arrest. At that point, Mr. Johnson attempted to resist arrest and then got into physical altercation in the hallway to the point that Mr. Johnson got Deputy Lewis in headlock, tugging on the duty belt. It wasn't until then that Mr. Johnson escalated to the point that Deputy Lewis fired his weapon one time into his rear end.
In your view, for what was Mr. Johnson being arrested?
He was charged with obstruction and then also the battery as a result of what occurred during the altercation.
And did that obstruction arise? Was the initial arrest because of that obstruction rather than obstruction once the arrest began?
Yes, it was obstruction for not following the court rules.
Okay.
There are a couple things I want to point out. Mr. Johnson, the attorney, said here that the sign has to create law. Well, not really for the purposes of where we are now. Because the purpose of where we are now is whether there was arguable probable cause to support the arrest. The question is whether a reasonable officer could have believed that he had probable cause. I think the sign is icing on the cake. I think if the bailiff came up and said, don't chew gum here, or something of that sort, he would likely have the authority to do that. He's charged with maintaining order, security, and quorum. But particularly with the sign in the courthouse or at the courtroom door, that indicates that absolutely a reasonable officer could have believed that he had probable cause to make sure that the rules were followed. Even if it was not technically law, as my adversary says. I think that the one error the district court made was in saying that there was no arguable probable cause in the district court's decision, particularly on page 24 of the order. It's really just one sentence where he says that if defendants were not lawfully discharging official duties, they lacked arguable probable cause. I think he skips a step there by equating no probable cause with arguable probable cause. And particularly when you look, and there's no further discussion of arguable probable cause. And if you look at the page before that, page 23, the district court wrote that without some indication that the judge or judges who provided in Portal A prohibited tablet use, or there was in fact a sheriff's office policy, the court cannot conclude that Lewis had the authority to order Johnson to stop using his tablet. There's a step skip there, is that maybe they didn't have a lawful authority. I think they did. But the question is whether or not a reasonable officer could have believed, or if you follow some of the language in the Fourth Amendment use of force cases, it's whether every reasonable officer would have known that there was no probable cause.
And I don't think that standard can be met on these facts.
A number of things I'd like to go over that are undisputed. As I said, there were repeated requests to Mr. Johnson. To turn off the tablet. In fact, we went out in the hallway twice. There was abject defiance of the directive. At the time that the deadly force was used, they had been wrestling a little bit. Mr. Johnson had not submitted at all. In fact, he escalated it by putting the deputy in a headlock and reaching for his duty belt. I don't think there's any question that the force was reasonable at that point. I would like to address one point that I think that the appellate raises in their brief, I think it is a concern that needs to be addressed, and that is that under Georgia law, someone has a right to resist an unlawful arrest by using proportionate force. Of course, we say that there's no right here to resist because it was a lawful arrest. Certainly, the question of the right to flee under Georgia law is the right not to be punished for resisting arrest if there was no probable cause for the original arrest. But it is not a ticket to escalate the resistance. To the point where deadly force is used, let alone use your means of trying to flee in order to justify the escalating force that you use. And I would say there's no case that I would say that I have found that allows a person who has resisted an unlawful arrest, if we had that here, to then sue damages that they sustain in initiating the resistance in the flee. The cases that are cited with respect to being no arguable cause are demonstrably distinguishable. In one case, the person did not obstruct. He was in a parking lot in the Perkins versus Thrasher case. During the pat down for weapons, he bucked. They said that was not obstruction. In another one, the WBY case, which was the valet at an adult entertainment club, was detained, and when he had not done anything to take one step back, when he was confronted by the police. The Miranda case decided by the district court, the officer arrested the person when He had used a foul word towards the officer while walking away. That did not constitute obstruction. And certainly we would say that under the circumstances here, for all the reasons that we've stated, there was at the very least arguable probable cause to support this arrest, which then the rest of the claim is meritless as a result of that. But even without arguable probable cause, certainly the force was justified the way things developed. The last thing I want to mention, less than a question, is that with respect to Deputy Goodson, there is no issue that had been raised with respect to his use of the taser, which was the only involvement that he had in this entire case. So we would ask that the district court judgment be affirmed for the reasons that I've stated today and set out in brief.
Thank you, Mr. Safran. Mr. Johnson, you have 3 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honors. In response to the appellee's arguments and to continue our previous discussion, the law enforcement officers need to have limits on their actions. If the sheriff's department put up the signs, which appears to happen, then arrest people for violating those signs. There's no check on what the sheriff's department does. There is no due process.
If the sheriff's department is putting up rogue signs around the courthouse, can't we assume that the judges will notice and instruct the sheriff to take those down?
I think that is an assumption, Your Honor, that could be made.
But a pretty fair one, isn't it?
I would think that if it is a fair assumption, it doesn't create the ability for a sheriff's deputy to then have a lawful order. Like sheriff's deputies have an obligation to know the law, just like every other citizen. And if they're going to arrest someone for obstruction for not following a lawful order, they need to have the law that backs up that order.
But there's no evidence here that the sheriff's office put up these signs for their own ends, right? We've got evidence that court rules said no electronics in the courtroom.
From my understanding,
I thought you had agreed, you had conceded that at least with respect to some individual courtrooms, some of the judges did enforce the very rule that was posted on signs throughout the courthouse. Did I misunderstand that?
Your Honor, I believe that in courtrooms, the judges will tell people not to use electronic devices.
I thought you had conceded that that was at least the case in some of these individual courtrooms in this courthouse. No?
No, Your Honor, I was talking about that from the perspective of I've been in many courtrooms, I've been ordered to use or not use electronic devices in the past. I know that the courts will issue those orders, and then if the deputy enforces that order, that would be enforcing a law of order. I can see that being an instruction.
What about the deputy's testimony here, though? One deputy said this is the rule everywhere. The other one said in some of the courtrooms the judges enforce this rule.
Yes, Your Honor, that is the testimony that's in the record here. And I believe that is what creates a disputed issue. I think that ultimately it's also...
Where's the evidence? Where's the evidence to the contrary?
Your Honor, Deputy Goodson made it very clear that it is up to the individual judges on how that is enforced.
Right, but that's the very best evidence for your side, is that some judges... Vigorously enforce this rule and others don't, right?
Your Honor, I believe that is not the best evidence. I believe the best evidence is that there was no order to a deputy to arrest him for having a tablet.
Okay. I think we understand your case, counsel. We'll be in recess for 10 minutes.